Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 89, November 21st, 2011. Hello!
Greetings all!
Hello, you fishy fans. Today, we will be discussing comments from Nigel in Bridport in the UK, and Andreka in Oregon, and from Pittsburgh, and Ryan in Mesa, Arizona.
All right. First thing I'd like to ask, though, before we even get to that, I'd like to ask our UK listeners if anyone was able to make it to Aquatics Live. And if so, what did they think about it?
Give us a report.
Yeah, and hopefully someone was able to make it there. It sounds like it was quite the interesting exposition, so I hope so.
And, exciting part, we have a giveaway winner.
Indeed. The TriHops giveaway that we announced in last week's episode has been won by none other than Nigel in Bridport, UK.
Congratulations.
So, yeah. He sent us his address, which we will not be reading here. But he also had some comments, so if you want to read those.
He says, loving the show, and we'll let you know when they have arrived safely and keep you updated on their progress. And we'll try to take as many picture and videos as possible for you and the other listeners.
Right.
So, congratulations, Nigel.
Yeah, and it sounds good. We'd love to see kind of a video journal of how it goes as you hatch them. So, yeah, any pics and videos that you can send our way would be great. And we're glad that you are the winner, and glad to welcome you officially to this part of the show. You've been a Facebook contributor for some time, and we have talked about that a bit, but this is the first time, I think, that you've emailed us directly, so welcome.
All right, we're going to go to Andreka in Oregon.
Yes. Do you want to tell us what she says?
In one recent episode, someone asked you to go over the basics of fish keeping setup.
Okay, well, I think that's a great idea, and we're going to do that. What we're probably going to do is pre-record that just before our Christmas break, and then we'll release it during Christmas break. We're going to do a couple of episodes like that.
We're going to stockpile some episodes so we can just do Christmas.
Yeah, so they won't be as fresh, I guess, in a way, as freshly
but
recorded.
You know what's great, though, about podcasts and digital technology is that it doesn't go stale. It doesn't go sour.
We should hope
not. It doesn't even curdle. So it's okay.
Non-curdling podcast.
Non-curdling podcast.
That's true.
She goes on to say, I would like to ask what are standard fish keeping maintenance review for the average setup, i.e. 29-gallon tank with the standard filter, heater, lights, and aerator.
Okay, that's a great topic that we can also cover now. So I would start out by saying the most daily task that you should perform is just to, when you're feeding the fish, one of the times that you feed the fish during the day, check the thermometer. Make sure temperature is within comfortable parameters. Check the filter flow. Make sure it's actually flowing. You know, sometimes the power goes out for a couple of seconds and then the filter doesn't start again or it gets obstructed or whatever. So watch for that. Check the fish behavior during feeding time. If they're acting strangely or different, anything like that. Check for missing livestock or anything that just seems off. You know, as you're feeding them, it only takes a couple of minutes, but it can be very important. Like that time I noticed that all the snails from the bottom of the tank had climbed up to a space about 2 inches above the bottom, and then I looked up and realized the filter had been off.
2 inches above the bottom?
Above the bottom. Mm-hmm. Above the bottom of the tank.
Where would the substrate start with?
What?
Oh, as opposed to being on the substrate.
Right, they were no longer on the substrate. They were on the glass. This line that you could have drawn the line with a marker, but it was made out of snails.
Weird.
And almost. And I realized that there was a problem with the substrate, and so I took corrective measures, and everything was okay. But if I hadn't done that, I might have had a big problem on my hands. That was a while ago, but it just illustrates, you know, the necessity of checking things often. The next one would be very big. Partial water changes, of course. Ideally, you know, we would do water changes constantly, like they do in a river in the wild, but we can't. So we have to
unless
narrow it
you
down.
Build a river in your house.
Right, which most people
but
don't.
Probably not.
Right. So, you know, twice a week is great if you can do it. Once a week is pretty good. That's usually what I end up doing, once a week. And even if you do once a week and you occasionally miss it, then you're okay, because some people only do twice a month. I notice a difference when I don't do it enough.
The fish aren't as happy.
Right. So I do it once a week.
And we only miss it if, you know, you're sick.
Very sick or something like that, or we're out of town. Yeah. Or something like that. So it doesn't happen often. But, you know, 20% to 35%, I have taken stock of the water changes I do. And the smaller tanks, I often do 20%. The larger tanks, especially the ones with a higher bioload, I do closer to 35%. So somewhere in there. If you have a reservoir that you can let the water degas in or outgas and approach the proper temperature in, you know, some people have a big barrel or stock tank or something that they heat and they also aerate or pump so that and put a heater in and all that, then you can do larger changes because you can approximate conditions. Yeah, especially the outgassing is important. But you can do up to 35 easily without outgassing in most situations. And for a tank that's 29 gallons, I would get a water changer like a Python or something like that when you hook up to your sink and it can drain and fill the tank.
Because really, who wants to lug all that water in a bucket over to wherever you're going to drain it and slop it all over the floor?
Right. And that in Hawaii, we had a 29. That's when we decided we needed to get a water changer like that.
Well, we had one before we moved.
We had one before we moved, but we didn't bring it with us.
We needed to get
another one. So I built one in Hawaii, and yeah, that was the 29 gallon was the clincher, because before that our largest tank was a 20, and you can get by doing that, but so
it's not so fun.
I would recommend a water changer like that, or a pump with a hose that helps, so you don't have to pick the bucket up. You know, you can set the pump down in the bucket and the tube in the tank and fill up the tank like that. And gravel washing I would include in that. You know, most
in the water change.
Yeah, most setups, gravel washing is important. If you've got a heavily planted tank or certain other setups, you don't need to do the gravel washing as much, but you just take whatever comes off the surface lightly without digging down. But most of the time, gravel washing is good. There's the no-touchy substrate, which you can do.
The what?
Where you just have a substrate that you don't really take a whole lot out, so that there's certain other bacterial things going on down there. It can help take care of nitrates. By turning it into atmospheric nitrogen, but you have to keep the oxygen very low, and if you get down in the substrate, you're introducing oxygen. So there are certain, if you're doing that, then you wouldn't play in the substrate so much. You wouldn't do the gravel washing, but
they really call it no touchy.
Some people probably do.
Is that
maybe
a,
I made
a
it
brand
up.
Name?
No, it's not. But most, I would say for most setups, gravel washing is important, unless you're doing a heavily planted tank. You just go ahead and
okay.
do it. Well, we talked a little bit about that before, and if you're interested in that, you can look that up. Look up substrate, and you can find some more on our other podcasts. Number two would be replace or rinse the sponges or filter pads or cartridges or whatever, and do it regularly. I do it twice monthly on most of my tanks. Once weekly on tanks with a high bioload, like a goldfish tank. I've got two filters on the tank, and I do one week and one the next week. And it is important to make sure not to damage the bacterial colonies when you do that. And most filters have some sort of provision for an area for bacterial surface area.
Surface area. We should write a song about surface
area. We should. Some have a sponge. Some have a bio wheel. You know, the Marineland bio wheel filters have the bio wheel. Something like that. Purpose of whatever this happens to be in your filters to, of course, house bacteria and not to catch particulate matter so much. And I've heard of people rinsing their bio wheels off with chlorinated water or bleaching it or, you know, scary things like that. Please, no! The bacteria! You want to keep those alive. So there are the disposable or rinsable portions of your filter, and those need to be checked regularly and replaced and or rinsed regularly. But make sure the parts that are supposed to house the bacteria don't get rinsed regularly, because you want to keep those alive, of course. Number three. Check your intake tubes, intake screens, and your impeller and your filter, and remove any matter that obstructs them. It doesn't take much to do that. The foxtail brushes that you can get at the pet store are good. You just run them through the tubes and things like that. The impeller is sometimes a little tricky because hairs can get caught on it and things like that. So sometimes you have to pull the impeller out. It's usually housed in a little tight little area that's attached to the intake tube. And you pull that out, you have to do it carefully not to bend it, because if you bend the impeller,
nothing
you've
works.
Ruined everything. It's bad. So,
do they sell replacement impellers? You just have to buy a new impeller.
A lot of times you can get replacement impellers. It depends, but you can find them a lot of the time. But it's good to, you know, do this filter maintenance where you're scrubbing out the tubes and everything about once a month. Some may need it more or less often, depending on the bio load in the tank. But it's amazing how fast grunge can accumulate on the inside of a tube, and it doesn't take much on the inside of the tube to really decrease the flow. You can have just a small little layer of material on the inside of the tube, and you can decrease the flow by, you know, a huge margin. So it's important to keep those clean inside. Number four, I would say, is scrape or scrub off the glass, and this may or may not be necessary, depending on the light, the bio load, plant growth, algae crew, and so on. I've got tanks where I hardly ever have to do it. Like this tank here, this 55, I don't need to do it. I don't even remember if I've ever done it since I set this tank up.
Do we have a scraper in there, one of the magnetic ones?
No.
See, we don't have one.
And it doesn't need it, and I don't know that it ever does. I can't remember ever doing this tank because the algae crew is some red cherry shrimp and a whole bunch of bristle noses. A whole passel of them.
And it has live plants in it.
And it has live plants that are growing and reducing the nutrients that the algae has available. But I have other tanks where I do need to do it fairly frequently. So just depending on your situation. It's important to remember that, you know, if depending on your situation, you may only want to do the front glass and leave the sides because some fish like to graze on the algae. So if you have fish like that, you can leave the sides alone and then just clean out the front. It is important, of course, to make sure that particles don't get caught between the scrubber and the glass, especially particles of gravel or things like that, because that'll really mess up your glass. And don't scrape too close to the substrate, because if you do, you run the risk of catching said particles. So I usually leave an inch or so above the substrate that I don't mess with. Okay. It's also important to clean the cover glass on top with something aquarium safe.
And that would be so that it doesn't block the light?
Yes, so the light is not blocked or obscured. This is especially important if you grow plants, of course. The frequency you need to do that depends on the hardness of your water, the surface turbulence because of the little drops that hit the glass and dry there, and so on. So I can't give you a number exactly, but whenever it looks like it's obscured or a little cloudy is good, even a little bit, because that will once again reduce a lot of the light and can... it's almost like not having the light if you do it too much. So an aquarium safe product is necessary, and there are several of them out there, but still rinse thoroughly once you've done that. And sometimes a scraper is needed. Sometimes if it gets really bad and you have really hard water, you can use a razor blade or a metal aquarium glass scraper to get it off, all in conjunction with the cleaning product that's safe for aquarium use. It's sold specifically for aquariums. But that's important to keep the inside of your tank lit properly. And of course you should also change the light bulbs. This is kind of included in this. And depending on what type of light bulb you have, if you have LEDs, you don't need to change them. If you have fluorescent tubes, it depends on the type. Some you need to change every year, some every 6 months. And if you have anything else, then what is it doing? Unless you have metal halide, then you know those are pretty much the only ones you'll use. Some kind of fluorescent, it could be compact fluorescent or T5s or very high outputs or lots of different things, but they need to be changed about once every year to once every 6 months, depending on the type. And finally, clean the outside of the front glass.
So you can see your fish!
You can see your fish and it looks nice. Not spots or fingerprints or dust.
Nice little paw through the middle.
Right. You know, something, I've used a lot of different things to clean the glass. My favorite glass cleaner was something that Coralife used to make.
Do they not make it anymore?
But I don't think they make it anymore because I can't find it.
It's because you liked it.
Yeah. And then there are some things that I really don't like at all, but something I like is this grapefruit-smelling non-toxic cleaner we get at Target.
Are we allowed to say the brand?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's Method. I don't know how many of you have Targets. Method brand cleaners. It's not a Target brand. They sell it there. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's non-toxic.
Good stuff.
Smells like grapefruit.
But it works really well on getting the glass clean. I love it. And, of course, you have to be careful not to get it in the tank.
You know what else I noticed, just as a side note? It gets tarnish off of silver, too.
Oh, that's kind of fun. And, you know,
some people... have a silver stand under your fish tank.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people do.
Of course. And a lot of people are also going to listen to the break right about now. this isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
And getting back to different cleaning the glass, you know, the ammonia-based cleaners work. The glass cleaners they use on windows and stuff. Mm-hmm. They work, but you have to be really careful about getting that in the water because you don't want ammonia in your
right.
water. But anything. You should just keep anything, any cleaner out of your water. And something that I do to do that, I'll hold the bottle really close to the glass and then just squirt slowly so it mostly drips down the front instead of spraying. You know, and that makes a difference.
You can also, instead of spraying the glass, spray it on whatever you're wiping it down with.
Yeah, that's another good way to do it. Sometimes I do that, too. But either way, I just try to make sure that nothing gets on inside the tank. Okay. Now, Andrejka, I must admit there are many other things we could talk about, but I think if I had to pick the top six, I think that's probably what I would Probably pick those. And there are others, but if you can keep a handle on those, you're going a long way. So, there you go. Thank you for an excellent suggestion.
Okay, we're going to move on to Anne from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
She had been having problems with ram's horn snails, and we had recommended that she get some assassin snails.
This was episode 68.
Yes, it was a while ago. She says, I got an assassin snail, named it Ninja, and put it in my 30-gallon planted tank. I have never seen the snail again, not even once. However, I used to be able to pull out 10 to 20 snails at a time from my tank at least once a week, sometimes almost every couple of days. Now, sometimes I can spot a couple of snails when I first turn the light on, but I really have to look for them, and sometimes don't see any at all. They are not the problem or unsightly like they used to be, and my plants are no longer being eaten up by the ram's horns. So thanks for the advice. I am guessing Ninja is alive and well, but I really have never seen the assassin again. It's because he's sneaky. He's an assassin. I attached a photo of my tank, the healthy plants, and no assassin snail to be seen. It's funny how fish and shrimp cannot appear in a photo, though. There are tons of cherry shrimp, Endler's neons, dwarf emerald, rasbores, dwarf neon rice, fish, and a mono and bamboo shrimp in that tank, and you can hardly see most of them.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to hear that your assassin snail is doing his job. I hope you're paying him well.
Because his name is Ninja. He has to sneak around and, you know,
exactly.
disappear like a ninja.
But it's definitely doing the job, and that's good. And it's not uncommon for assassin snails to be rather secretive if they're not in large numbers. They tend to bury themselves in the substrate, which is not unlikely that that's what's happening here, burying himself in the substrate until a snail gets near and then comes out and eats and so on. And but it's good to hear that it's working. And I think it's also funny that the fish and shrimp don't always appear in the photo. I've seen that same phenomenon. You take a picture, especially from just a couple feet away, and the fish start to disappear. It's amusing. But thank you for attaching your tank. I love that tank. It looks nice.
We'll put it up on the
research. We'll put it up on the research page, mm-hmm. yeah. Actually, she mentioned later on that she put another picture in, and we're going to talk about that, too.
Oh, okay. So, the other part of her email says, also, I had mentioned in my previous email that I had set up a 3-gallon eclipse tank with moss as a substrate on the bottom, along with wood and Java ferns based on your low-light plants episode. You mentioned in the podcast that might be neat to see, so I'm attaching a photo of that little tank as well. Right now it has 2 zebra and leopard danio juvenile fish and cherry shrimp in it, though the shrimp are all hiding under the moss and wood much of the time that the light is on. The nice thing about the moss is it forms a loose mat that I just lift up and put the siphon underneath, and it cleans out all the junk off the bottom very easily, like it was a bare-bottom tank. Oh, and one idea I heard for not siphoning up cherry shrimp, which I have done, is to put a small mesh fishnet at the other end of the siphon in the bucket to catch any shrimp, and then just put them back in the tank.
That's a good idea.
I
like that. Thanks for sharing that. And I like your Java rug, too. I'm going to call it a Java
cool
rug,
idea.
If that's okay.
Yeah.
And we're going to put that on the resources page, too. It's a cool little tank. I feel that we feel kind of flattered and proud that you set it up based on our recommendation. So it's nice to see that, and it looks like it's come out to be a nice little tank. And I guess this harks back to what Juliet was saying about the shrimp hiding. There are a couple of fish in there, and so the shrimp are spending most of their time hiding. And I imagine if you took the Danios out, they would not do nearly as much hiding, but mm-hmm. not saying that you need to, just saying that that would probably change that.
And finished up her email suggesting that we do a future podcast on aquascaping.
Yeah, which I think is a great idea. I think aquascaping is a great part of the hobby, and I find it very fascinating. I love to see aquascapes and so on. I don't consider myself an expert on aquascaping, so I would like it if we could interview some folks about it. And I like what you've done with your tanks, Anne. If you want to come on the show, that would be cool. We'd love to interview you about it. And anyone else who would like to be, you know, throw in their two cents about aquascaping, that would be great. If we have some of you and that's a great part of your hobby, then please feel free to chime in. We would love that. Okay, now we're going to talk about Ryan in Mesa, Arizona. He's a new contributor.
Welcome, Ryan.
Yeah. He says that he found our show a few months ago when he was searching for information on fairy shrimp and has been enjoying listening ever since. That's kind of cool.
That's great.
Yeah. And initially he had purchased some fairy shrimp eggs as an alternate to brine shrimp for feeding newly hatched annual killifish. The fact that they can be hatched in the same container as the killifish fry and will live until they are eaten makes them a great alternative to brine shrimp.
That is cool that you can hatch them in the same container.
Yeah, yeah, and that they don't gradually, you know, just die over a course mm-hmm. of a few hours. They can just keep growing. I think that's a great way to do it. I know the company that I've purchased them from sells red-tail or spiny-tail fairy shrimp, among other species, in huge lots. Those are that species they sell mm-hmm. specifically as a possibility for food items because they're very common and they get a lot of eggs, so you can buy thousands and thousands of eggs for pretty reasonable prices from them. If you're interested in that, I'm not advertising for them. They're not paying me to say this. I'm just letting you know it's arizonafairyshrimp.com. That's where I bought mine. And you can get them for fairly cheap. So if anyone's interested in trying that, that's a pretty good place to start. Ryan said that for the first batch, he decided to give them their own container, as he wanted to raise some to adults and collect the eggs. That's a sensible way to do it. Yeah. So he started some eggs hatching in about 1 inch of water, and every few days he would increase the water level by half an inch or so. And every day after adding the additional water, he would find more newly hatched shrimp.
So, it's like Christmas.
Yeah, so he made a connection with this, which I thought was very interesting. He said, when you mentioned that you only top the water off in your triops tank, talking about our triops tank that we...
The one at work that we were talking about, right, that you were surprised... The critters hatched in?
The babies hatched in this old water. He said, when we were topping off the water, maybe we were seeing newly hatched triops, maybe the triops hatchings were being triggered by the influx of fresh water when I was topping off the tank, which makes a lot of sense. It's a very probable hypothesis. So thanks for suggesting that, and I may play with that and test that out and see if I can reproduce it mm-hmm. dependably relating to when I top it off. It's a cool idea. Says, anyway, back to the fairy shrimp. I found that mixing one part aged aquarium water to three parts distilled water works well for hatching the eggs and still provides enough buffering to keep the pH stable. Also, powdered spirulina works well as a substitute or supplement for green water when feeding. And I think that's a great idea, mixing the water there, for several reasons. I think the pH stability is extremely important, and I'm sure that helps avoid crashes on many occasions. And it may also introduce a few beneficial bacteria and help get the cycling going in such a container. Because I've noticed that even these small tanks seem to do better after a cycling mm-hmm. Period roughly equivalent to cycling. So I wouldn't be surprised if even some of these small tanks are cycling to a degree and that the bacteria are helping. So I was wondering, this is Ryan says, I was wondering if you had considered doing any vernal pool collecting for triops or fairy shrimp since they are native to your area. I have been talking about going on a collecting trip with a few friends from the local aquarium club, and we'll keep you posted if we do go. Thanks for hosting Aquariumax, and keep up the good work. Well, actually, we have done that once.
It's been a while.
It's been a long while, but we have collected fairy shrimp from a vernal pool once, maybe,
Set up in Rock Canyon?
Yeah, it must have been 12, 13 years ago or something like that.
It was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. And we just happened to spot a fairy shrimp.
It was a big one.
Yeah, it was a fairly large one. We captured it, brought it home, and we got the second generation out of it. It had an egg case, and it released the eggs, and we had this other generation come out, and then something happened, and so we didn't get a third.
Probably we moved or something.
I'm not sure what happened, but it didn't work out after that, but it did for a while, and it was cool. It was fun. And I've thought about doing it since, but we need to check our local regulations, because at the time, and this was, you know, quite a few years ago, but I didn't think about it, and I should have. Didn't think about the local
regulations.
You were
too young to think about things like regulations. Regulations are for old people.
Well, I'm still not old.
I know, it was a joke.
Okay.
Sometimes I make jokes.
That's true. But if it's permissible, if it works out according to the regulations, it would be fun. I mean, you need to be careful because a lot of these vernal pools are pretty fragile. But if, you know, we can make sure that we're following the regulations that protect the vernal pools, I would think that would be a lot of fun. And if you, Ryan, do organize a trip, we would be very interested in hearing about it, seeing any pictures or video that you get from such a trip.
Yes, because even if the regulations prohibit actually removing specimens, you could still do some video collecting.
Right. And there are all kinds of species in Arizona, all kinds of vernal pool organisms. You have various clam shrimp down there. You've got, oh, off the top of my head, I know you have beaver tail fairy shrimp. Those are huge. They're quite big.
Do they have a beaver tail?
They do.
Tail?
They have kind of a paddle-shaped tail.
Oh,
that's kind of a reddish color, and they're interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all kinds of fairy shrimp. They've got several different species and several different genera, actually, down there. Clam shrimp, tadpole shrimp, they've got all kinds of things. So that would be the place to go.
That would be neat.
A hotbed of vernal poolness. So, we would love to hear about that. And I think that about wraps it up for this week. I just wanted to give my little tidbit.
Give us your tidbit.
Okay, a few...
Is it a pineapple tidbit?
No, it's a different kind. It's about aquarium backgrounds.
Okay.
Okay, this one. A few episodes ago, well, several episodes ago, we said we're trying out different types of backgrounds, ways to attach backgrounds. You know, the mylar backgrounds with the photos on the back. Some of them are aquascape, some of them are just black or blue or whatever. But different ways of attaching them.
Mm-hmm.
And one way that we tried was the, what is it called, the sea view. It's kind of an light oily
gel
substance.
Kind of.
Yeah. And
viscous gel.
Yes, it's not even that viscous, it's more like oil.
Well,
but
yeah.
It's kind of a strange substance. I don't know exactly what it is, but anyway, we decided to try that and to try Vaseline and see which worked better. And I'll tell you what. Now that we've had it that way for several months, and we have set up several tanks with both, I would say that the sea view material works better in terms of keeping the color of the background true directly through the glass. It looks...
Vaseline's a little bit yellow.
The Vaseline has a little bit of color to it, and the sea view doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that's nice. I like that about it. But the sea view doesn't seem to be as permanent.
Does it come off?
It's, you get bubbles that creep back into it, and it starts to peel in the corners. If you haven't cut it exactly right, and you have a little bit of pressure because it's being pushed up against the edge of the frame of the tank or something, it will start to peel after a few months. But the Vaseline doesn't seem to do that, at least not as much.
So if you don't care, you know, it depends on what you care about more. If you're just putting on a black background, probably the Vaseline having a slight... tinge is not going to do a whole lot.
Right, and if you keep the Vaseline really thin, that layer, that also minimizes that. And it seems to stick longer in our experience so far. But the sea view looks better from the beginning, but it looks like you may need to reapply it every once in a while. So, that is what we have found, and if you have similar or completely opposite or contrary experiences, you can let us know about that too. But anything you would like to talk about that is fishy or closely related to fishy is most welcome. Thank you to all of our contributors, and
may the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.